guessing it was, it's only those big events where Pat's doing the sound that it's one Sheps and one 57th.
Well, I would think that he was using two shores just to be doubly sure that he could be heard.
That's why you're not doing it.
You know, but, I mean, really.
Hey, now. Oh, my God.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's the way it should
be. You can
be.
Never be. Hey, you know what, Jen? You can never be too sure.
That's right. You can never be too sure. That's what I always say. You can never be too sure. It's one of those things.
Recording, Kenny. Where's your announcement?
I think we're on the air, Jan. Are we on the air? I see the red light.
Yeah, I think we might as well get started. I mean, you know, 3:05 is when we go live. And if, by the way, if you're not in the Zoom room, you don't know what you just missed. You just heard the very tail end of a conversation that started a little bit earlier. But welcome to the Sound Broker Mastermind Roundtable, where we discuss everything that and anything that has to do with anything and everything. And then we try to relate it back to the entertainment industry that we're all part of, the touring, concert, lighting, sound. We do it in a very up-tempo way. Keeping it light and making everybody kind of happy. It's like therapy without the cost of therapy. That's what it's all about, right? You know, with that in mind, I just want to say that you're going to hear a lot of different opinions and stories, whatever. Just remember this one thing, that whatever you hear is an opinion, you must check out your own facts to see whether what we've said is true or just out of our imagination. Because remember, you can't tell the difference between what's real and what's vividly imagined. So there we go. And we're off and running. So welcome everybody to the Mastermind Group. How's everybody doing? I think today what I'd like to do is just run around the room real quick and see how everybody's doing and what's new with somebody. So let's start. The first person I see is David. David, what's new in your life? What's going on in the world for you in the last couple of weeks since we've seen you last?
Well, first of all, I got my second shot almost 2 weeks ago, so I'm almost 100% ready. And, cool. And I also got my COVID compliance officer training done, and that's going to be my next move until I get some real work. And I heard back from a producer who said, send me your driver's license and resume. So let's see what happens. I might actually be working one of these days soon.
Unbelievable. Who remembers what that's like? Hey, Kenny, what's new with you in your life, Ken Newman?
Oh, not a whole lot. Just getting ready to have our house fumigated. And that's like a big project to move out of the house for 3 days and stuff like that. You know, pets and the thing, all the food has to be separated and all kinds of stuff. It's a project. So fumigation project and working on stuff, you know, fixing up stuff that I'm selling on eBay is taking up a lot of my time lately.
Very good. You know, I was looking for a lighter on, eBay, and, you know, all I found was 3,000 matches for it, you know, so I don't know what good it is, but anyway. Eric, what's going on with you?
having about my 10th round in the boxing ring with TD Bank on documents for the PPP. Interestingly enough, there's about $100 discrepancy between a payroll report submitted and a payroll number that we put in the submission. And because of that $100 difference in $6 million of payroll, we have to do a new application. That was today's news. So that was interesting. And amazingly, tomorrow I have my first human to human meeting in a venue in a year.
All right. That is great news.
I didn't mention that I'm there to clean the floor, but that's another story.
Yeah, well, that's okay. That's okay. Just remember the physics of it all. People, you know, because light travels faster than sound, that's why some people look a lot smarter until you get close and then you hear them talk, you know, and that's what it is. So a lot of people are brighter looking from far away. So good luck with that meeting. Martin, what's new and exciting with you? Now, Martin is coming to us from England, and Martin, I've called Martin up and I've asked him to come and talk about what's going on in England, because they're going to be opening England up a lot sooner than they're going to be opening up America for concerts. So, but before we get to that, Martin, how you been? What's going on? What's the weather like there where you are?
It's today it's warm, about sort of 13, 14 degrees Celsius. I haven't had a shot because I'm too young. That's coming up next week. But I'm just spending my time still looking after the grounds being done tree work today.
Oh, great. Great. And Ken Porter, what's new with you since last week?
Learned more about refrigeration units than I ever want to know. But just trying to figure out all the stuff and how people are going to come back and how we're going to get things back going, because it looks like Easter is going to be the pivoting point around here to things start working again.
Well, that's cool.
When's Easter this year, Ken?
The 4th of April.
Very nice. And we have somebody new in the panel. Ralph is here today. Ralph, so what's new since we've seen you last?
Been a while. Hey, everybody. Trying to pivot, as they say. Working on a couple of other businesses that may touch entertainment, may not. Remains to be seen.
Well, hey, that's good. How's the family?
Kids are good. Kids are great.
Right? Know? And did the weather affect you at all? You're in Nashville too, right?
Yeah, we got a lot of snow, but it was awesome. You know, I'm a New Yorker, so we got 4 inches, which was the end of the world here. But we had a ball. You know, we drove in it and sledded and did all that cool stuff.
Very, very good. Excellent. Hey, Bruce, what's up with you, man? We haven't seen you all week. How you doing? What's going on with you? I'll speak for Bruce, seeing he's muted. I've had a great week. Yeah, everything.
He doesn't appear to be muted. There you go. Now you're muted. Now you're muted. But when you came on, I still didn't hear you. You're not muted, but I don't hear you.
We got a bunch of sound men in the room, and nobody can figure out the audio. I like that. That's what I like.
Go to your Zoom preferences and check that you have the proper.
We'll come back to you. We've got Fred in the room. Fred, how you doing? What's new with you? You've been working a lot, I think, right?
I have been. I was. I'm currently in Atlanta. I'm sitting in my hotel room in Atlanta. We're doing a medical show tomorrow from the new Piedmont Hospital. I'm doing a mitral clip case for Abbott Medical, and been busy. I got that. I think I don't know if I told you about this big job I have at the Bureau of Land Management in Phoenix, but that's taken up all of my time. And
is that hunting the rabbits? Are you rounding up the rabbits or?
No, I'm actually rebuilding engineering. I took out a bunch of stuff I put in over 20 years ago, a bunch of VHS and 3/4 and 1-inch and D2s and all kinds of tape machines. They had a big dub station. I took all that out along with the analog router, all the standard definition stuff, ripped all that stuff out, adding a new router to a Utah Scientific 144 crosspoint router, trying to get that all wired up, dealing with ClearCom systems, and I've got a bunch of servers to update that haven't been updated in 3 or 4 years. So I have this feeling this job is going to last somewhere into July.
So how's the family? Do you ever get to see your family anymore?
Oh yeah, I see my wife when I get home, and the fur kids are. I think you guys have seen a couple of the fur kids on camera before.
Mm-hmm. And everybody's happy. Everybody's healthy there.
Yeah, everything's good in Arizona. But like I said, I'm in Atlanta right now, which is a beautiful day in Atlanta. Last time I was here for the Olympics in 96. I was here for a month. I was a transmission manager for the Olympics in 96. I walked through the park 15 minutes before that bomb went off.
Wow.
And then they crucified that guy, Richard Jewell. And then I found out after watching the movie, I thought that he killed himself because the media crucified him. I found out that through the movie, he actually died of natural causes. So that's what's happening in Atlanta.
Well, very, very good. Bruce, did you get your mic back? Is your mic working? Okay. No, he's not. Well, we're gonna come back. But right now, hey, Beth, Tim. Tim, what's going on with you? How's life over there? What's new since we spoke last?
Nothing's new. Did one gig, did the first arena gig since Friday the 13th of March 2020, and then found out from that client that all the work they had in April, May, June, and July has all been moved to August, September, October, and November. So my life is back on hold until such a time as I'm probably working at Home Depot.
Oh, well, that's at least you look. I'm sure you would look good in orange. Something tells me that orange could be your color. You
know? Unless it's a jumpsuit that says county on it. Otherwise, I'm going to Nashville and I'm hitting up Ken Porter for a job.
Great. Ralph's there too. So make sure you look up Ralph as well while you're there.
So Ralph, you still in the affiliated with John McBride?
Hey.
No, I don't think McBride loves me that much since I left Claire.
Well, John, I mean, loves everybody.
You and Penny were the highlight of my visit to the shop in Nashville. So
that was a fantastic time. We had a ball back then. We really did. I love McBride, by the
way. It was great to see you all. I mean, people I talked to on the phone once or twice, and now I get to see them in person. It's always great.
Well, you know, getting to see Penny in person is always a treat anyway, even nowadays. Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. You see, it's a small world after all, right? Hey, Bruce, so I hear your mic is working now.
Am I back?
Yeah, you're back.
Oh, you know, the weird thing was, is my
it's like
mic,
you never left.
Really, it said seriously. It was unmuted and everything. And what I ended up having to do is come back into the meeting and then things seem to be working. Okay. Too strange. Okay. So I was supposed to get my first shot yesterday. They sent me a text and then an email and said they ran out. And they made me another appointment for Saturday. So that's what's going on with that. It'd be my first appointment Saturday at 10. Did two Zoom meetings during the week. Working on some stuff that hopefully will confirm for June. And, you know, just trying to find stuff to do.
very
good.
Was that live stuff, you know, in front of an audience in June, Bruce, or yes. Streaming?
Yes, in San Antonio, actually. Yeah. First of three shows. We've been doing drawings and sending stuff back and forth. Oh, they're pretty determined to do it, but, you know, of course, you know, we'll see what happens, but, you know, they're pretty determined. So we shall see.
Cool. Good for you.
The same thing happened to me with the shot. I was scheduled for today and they called me yesterday to say that they ran out of shots due to the weather. But as soon as they get them in, I'm first on the line. So I'll probably getting my shot before Saturday as well. I hope that's what happens. It's exciting. I mean, you know, the people getting the shots out, there's a lot of people getting the shots. America's starting to really kick in with the vaccine, which is a really good thing. Hey, Brian, what's going on in North Carolina? How you doing? How's life? How's the family? What's happening?
I don't know about North Carolina. I'm up in the Northeast this week, so I'm doing some other work up here. So I'm kicking off a program where we're looking at almost 1,400 miles of sidewalk across the country. So it's been an interesting.
Now, are you going to be, what are you doing? Crawling on the sidewalk? What's the story on it? You're testing it for bumps and bruises or whatever, you know?
Testing to A, to see if it's there, and B, if all the parts are compliant for Americans with Disability Act. And then
right.
we're working with a new set of standards to determine how rough the sidewalk is for somebody riding in a wheelchair.
So, okay, it's not like in case Tiger Woods decides to drive to wherever you are. No.
We want to fix the curbs. A couple of places where he may have driven today where it was beat up on the side of the road, but no. So I've got a couple of gigs that are starting to form and talk, but it's still slow and hit and miss. It's looking like the non-government stuff is going to start early May. Most of the governments have said they're not going to allow any of their facilities to operate until at least the 4th of July.
That's cool. So I guess it's good that so many of us have things to do and we're all staying busy, which is a good thing. And that's what I was hoping to hear from everybody, that things are starting to come back a little bit. And one of the things what we'd like to talk about right now is what's going on in England. So basically, Martin, why don't you take over from here and tell us what's going on? What's happening in England? How are they opening up? What's the plan? Because I hear that they're going to open it wide open now.
Well, that's not quite the case. There's a whole roadmap which of slowly opening up stuff. So as far as live entertainment goes, is that they're saying that we can't do any outdoor or any shows to full capacity until June the 21st. But prior to that, they're opening up in stages, like the schools are opening up, but the children, the secondary modern, which are sort of 14, 15, 16 year olds, they have to wear masks in school. And they have to be socially distanced if possible. There's a whole process, and at the end of 3 weeks, there's going to be government testing on after each stage. If the four tests aren't met, which is the vaccination program on time, evidence showing the vaccines are sufficiently doing their job, evidence that the infection rates are going down, so the national health isn't tested, and assessment risk on the variants, the new variants. So all those criteria have to be met before the government move into the next stage of opening up stuff. So if anything slips, then June the 21st is out the window. And of course, at the moment—
What about immediate shows? Is there anything popping up immediately? Or how's the work situation over there? As far as immediately, because right now, the way I see it is that United Kingdom is third in all the countries in the world that have vaccinated their population to 26.3%, just behind the United Arab Emirates at 56.15% and Israel at 82.4%.
Yeah, but we're still in a lockdown. You know, we're still locked down until March the 8th. I can't go out and meet anybody socially, even to, you know, for exercise, until we get to March the 8th. From that point on, I can go out and I can meet one person, or I can meet someone that's in my bubble, which would be another, you know, family members, as long as they're the only people I've ever been in contact with. So it'll be a slow process, but the big issue, and the government is saying that we can do reduced capacity shows, but there's been response to the government saying that they're not financially feasible. So nobody's going to do 50% houses because you can't make money. So I think that there might be some test shows because they want to try a rapid test of audiences arrive, testing before they go into the venue. So these are some pilot shows that they've got to organize. But streaming, from my point of view, our company is still doing some streaming events, and that's about it. And they will only start when we come out of lockdown.
And
did you see the little short thing that Keith Richards did about the Royal Albert Hall?
No.
Is if you look it up on YouTube, it's the Royal Albert Hall. I came across it yesterday. It's really cool. It's about a 3-minute video. It's all about people coming back to concerts. Right. It's really, really very well done.
Cool. So,
if you look at the chat, I'm sure if you look at the chat, Tina will look it up, and she'll be putting chats and, you know, links of stuff that we talk about into the chat. So if you want to save it for later, and if we remember, we'll put it on Facebook and YouTube as well in the comment section. But no sound, lighting, production company is doing any live shows, even for smaller crowds.
No, and that won't happen until we get into April time at the earliest. And I'm surprised that Ken says that he's got shows from April onwards. You know, are these shows to full arenas with you know, sold out shows?
A lot of the shows are Christian events, stuff there. You know, I didn't know how the church market was going over there. I haven't talked to Mick Spratt lately, see how he's doing up there in Manchester. But most of it's like church stuff starting out. And then there still is a lot of shows that, you know, I have tours doing one-offs in Texas and in Florida and some Oklahoma stuff in Mississippi coming to mind.
But I think the difference between England and America is that we have central government and they're controlling the entire British Isles. Whereas in America, you've got, am I right in thinking you've got in different states, you can have a governor of a state that says, well, I'm going to do shows. I don't care what's happening over in Colorado, is that, you know, down in Texas, we're going to do shows.
That's why Bruce Fallis is booked for a show in Texas, because Texas and Florida seem to be, you know, pushing the envelope in terms of doing gatherings, having gatherings.
I have some penciled stuff just after the summer for Orlando also, but you know, who knows if it's actually going to happen. But yeah, it's Texas and Florida that seems to be stumbling around, you know.
Well, the interesting one is Billy Bob's has been pretty much started 1st of February, and they're every weekend they've got shows booked up, major artists, you know, coming through there. And it's their 40th anniversary, you know, year this year. So they're doing a lot of stuff down there.
See, if you've got a governor of a state saying that that state can do shows, I can understand why people do shows in this country. Is that if we start doing shows and the government cancel it because suddenly there's a spike in infection rates, the promoter can't get insurance, you know, so no promoters going to actually risk, you know, at the moment we're saying, oh, great, June the 21st, I've got shows like we do the Hyde Park shows, British Summertime at Hyde Park, and we do the proms in Hyde Park. Now, British Summertime normally is the first 2 weeks of July, but I just can't see them taking the risk of starting to pay deposits and book people if they can't A, get COVID insurance, which they can't, because if the government suddenly pulls it because the infection rate's gone up, is that it's going to cost them a lot of money.
So what about the West End? Any talk of the West End starting back up? Are they starting to sell tickets just because they can?
I think that's the case. I think theatres start around about May time. So they're saying, but they're saying that the how it has to be 50% capacity.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me just add a few things here, because I heard that UK right now that they have the COVID vaccine passports are going to be introduced to reopen your economy. Have you heard anything about that? Because Israel, they've done that now in an app. So once you get vaccinated, you have an app and you have to go show it to get into certain things, like to get into synagogues, gyms, hotels, and to show who's been inoculated. And the other thing is Fauci, my voice sake, Dr. Fauci, basically is saying that the CDC is going to come out very soon with the criteria of what's going to happen once you do get vaccinated and what you could do. And based on that, my understanding is that we're looking at somewhere along the lines of, you know, getting some herd immunity in like about 6 more weeks once these vaccines start to really come on the market. So I can see that there's a possibility that we could all go back to work, you know. Australia, I believe now Sydney. Does anybody know what's going on in Sydney? Because I read that they too are now opening up for shows.
They're back in rehearsal. Hamilton, the Australian production of that, went back into rehearsal, I think, 2 weeks ago. I don't know if they're selling tickets for it yet. I'd be surprised if they're not. But they've resumed rehearsals. Also remember that Australia, New Zealand locked down a lot harder than anyone else did. And that's why they're able to go back. I mean, New Zealand gets freaked out if they have one positive case. You know, I had 100 new positive cases in my county yesterday.
Well, hopefully we'll get to that point also at some point, right?
Yes, but I don't think it's going to be April, considering, according to my state health department, it could be December at current vaccination rates before I can be vaccinated, because I'm under 65 and my health conditions are not serious enough to move me forward.
Well, we're all convinced or strongly hoping that the part of that statement that's going to change is at the current rates, because at current rates, yes, you're right, December. But they're going to ramp this up so heavy. They're going to get Johnson & Johnson approved. There's going to be all kinds of changes to the distribution.
I don't want to be negative Nancy here, but I'll believe that when there's a needle in my arm. And okay, right now,
We're going to hope for you to have it before September, though.
Yeah, but there's 100 cases in your county. But who's counting?
they're small. Take two, right?
That's right.
Hey, Jan, I just got my second one yesterday. There's my
all right, and that card there. And by the way, Paul is in Austin, and where he's lost the water and power and all sense of reality, right?
We didn't lose. I spent a week pumping up my power system, dug 1,000 feet of ditches, put in a 3,000 gallon water tank. I had water through the whole thing. I didn't have internet, but I had water and I had power.
I also heard you put in a skylight into your apartment and the people above you got really angry. Is that true?
No, I don't think so. I'll check.
Jan. You're so funny.
I'll have to go take a look, Jan. If I find one, I'll let you know. No, you know who's been cited a lot down at the Comedy Club and the Stubbs Barbecue is Joe Rogan and Elon Musk. They're running buddies now, and they hang out at the Capital City Comedy Club in town.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also hear Travis Tritt is performed at the Alabama Theater on July 28th, and he had like 1,200 people, and he's going to continue doing more shows. Did anybody hear anything about that? Nobody? Am I the only one reading the press, the trades? What'd you say, Ken?
You said July 28th, he played at Alabama.
No, January 28th, he did a show. He did a show at the Alabama theater for 1,200 people in Birmingham. And then he's on tour right now doing it.
Tina just put a link to it in the chat. I see. Travis Tritt performs at the Alabama Theater.
Yeah. And I also heard that back in New York, so, you know, we have Eric in New York, New Jersey, but Cuomo just cleared the way for 10,000 plus venues that will limit it to 10%. Will they be able to make money at 10%?
No. Turn the lights on for that.
Yeah.
You know?
So I think the big difference between England or the UK and the US is that the US seems to be governing by state, and the UK has a countrywide or UK-wide. What is the UK? A country or continent? I don't even know. I'm so bad. But, you know, the countrywide. Yeah. So the country of the United Kingdom is governed by one director, panel. Yeah,
we have a prime minister based in London, and they come up with all the laws and rules. There is a slight difference in Scotland. Scotland does has its own parliament, so they can actually override certain things that they may not agree with.
But generally speaking, the United Kingdom is, the rules are set by the leaders of the United Kingdom and so forth. And so with this whole COVID plan, they can set a plan for the entire country. And that's cool. I wish we had a countrywide plan like that, you know, for reopening.
Yeah, it's actually interesting that they put the onus on the school children and the parents of the school children, because they've been told they have to wear masks. Now, if they don't do that and they don't behave and they don't adhere to socially distance and all the rules that go with that, is that it's the knock-on effect is that it will affect the, you know, everything down the line, including the parents being able to go away for a holiday abroad, because at the moment international travel is banned, and it's banned until June.
So do all the rules for COVID can apply to the colonies of England?
When you say colonies, do you mean places like Jamaica?
Belize and all that, yep.
Probably not. I would imagine that they've got, you know, so certainly some of those islands haven't got, you know, got very, very minor numbers of COVID because they're so remote. But I would imagine that it's a similar situation as a US state. Maybe the governor of that particular atoll makes the decisions. This will be guidance from the UK.
Well, one thing I do know, Bahamas has shows going on right now because I sold an outdoor stage to them, a mobile stage to them that they needed. So they have shows going on right now outdoors in the Bahamas. So we do know that there is some events going on around the world. Martin, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I was reading that the prime minister says that he wants to set up some sort of mass testing for venues. So when people come in, they're tested before they go into the venue. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, that's the pilot system that they're talking about. It's a mass testing. So that's something they want to do, pilot schemes, which are going to start in April, but they actually haven't explained how they're going to do that. And of course, even though, in my opinion, I think the British government have done very, very well, there is a lot of people in our industry that feel that they've been let down by the government. And they're saying that anything that is organised by the government should, concert-wise, or should be boycotted. So you're going to get into that huge argument of people falling out, because some freelancers will say, well, I need the work. And other freelancers will say, well, we shouldn't be helping the government out because they've not financially helped out any of the freelancers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes some sense. That's
a dilemma. So is the BBC part of the government?
No. The BBC is funded by the government, but they're not run by the government. They have a board of directors. And
because those shows in the park, those are BBC events, aren't they?
No.
The one that Barry Manilow did, yeah, that's a BBC Radio 2 show. But there's been no talk of that.
But the other shows are not necessarily BBC shows, huh? The ones we were talking about that you usually do in June.
Yeah, British Summertime, that's AEG.
Well, no kidding. How about that? So chances of that happening is slim and none, right? That's almost absolutely positively not going to happen.
Yeah, they've got a B plan. They're looking at possibly moving the dates to later on in the year. And last year, my understanding was, is that they were talking to the BBC about sharing infrastructure so that the AEG could do their shows, and then the BBC Proms and Proms in the Park followed on from that, even though they're completely, it's a different site, it's laid out different, but that was something that I guess they felt maybe that's the only way we can get the show to happen. But I would imagine that they're going to have a B plan, because first 2 weeks of July, highly unlikely, I would have thought.
So are you doing any shows at all? Are you personally, or is anybody you know in England doing any shows?
No, only streaming shows.
Mm-hmm. Now,
yeah, because none of the venues are open.
Okay. Now, in regards to the streaming shows, I read an article about the UK, and maybe you could fill me in on this, that the venues are now saying, wait a second, if you're streaming it, we want a piece of that action. Have you heard anything about that?
I'm hearing that they're asking for it, because, and you can understand it, because the venues aren't getting any income, you know, from ticket sales. So why shouldn't they get a slice of the pie from streaming?
I don't know. I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, being greedy as I am, and if it was my music and my performance and my this and my that, I'd say, hey, I'll go to another place. You know, you just have the place. You know, it's almost like a relationship where, you know, where a woman needs a reason and a man needs the place, you know, but I would think
it's Jan. It's just like the venue having a slice of concessions if they're contracted out and they don't own the concessions. It's just like a sports team in an arena that demands a slice of concessions because they're the reason people came and bought the soda, the beer, or the chips. I don't see that concept as being radically different. What's different is that it's not common, but the venue has lost all of its support income, other than just the basic daily or hourly rent on the facility. The other thing, this goes back to your comment about rapid testing at the venue, at the point of entrance. I posted in the chat a link to Peter Diamandis' blog. He's a TED talker, prognosticator, author. He held an event, a live event, with doctors pre-testing what was supposed to be a bubble of participants and staff. Daily testing, all of this, the event's over, they wind up infecting 30 or 40 or 50 people out of the deal. And it was so that the guests and attendees would not have to wear masks. That was the primary motivation, that it would be business as usual. The production crew who sat back in the end of the, in a corner of the building, ran the video, ran the audio, did the scenics, did the lighting, in masks, they didn't associate with the rest of the people. None of them got infected. But out of the 300 or 400 people that were otherwise at this thing, 40 or 50 of them wound up being diagnosed. And I put a copy of the link to Diamandis Mea Culpa in the chat.
And so just to tie that into a bow, what does that mean for us?
What that means is that testing people at the point of entry will not guarantee you a safe event.
Because in this case,
it pretty well says it's very unlikely to be a safe event if you're relying only on testing at the point of entrance.
Right.
Now, what about the fact that they're going to now, when people get vaccinated, like Paul just showed us the card, and in Israel they're having an app, and I'm sure eventually that we'll all have that app that we have, so that we can present that at the door saying, hey, we've been vaccinated. And it would probably be at the same time, whereas you would have to sign a disclaimer saying that, you know, look, you could use my image, and if I get hurt, you know, so be it. You know, it would be like going to a Gallagher show that you have to say, okay, if I get wet, you know, I'm not going to sue Gallagher. You know,
being sprayed with watermelon seeds is a lot different than being sprayed with a respiratory virus.
Yeah, I guess.
But it's the same waiver. The same waiver you can sign, though. You can just say virus instead of watermelon seeds.
Yeah, well, the point is that those waivers actually are not legally enforceable either, particularly in the case of health risks, because I've been down that road already with someone else. But and, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I suggest you consult one. But right now, the impediments to gigs of scale or of any size or festivals is going to be insurance. And if artists cannot get tour completion insurance, if promoters cannot get insurance, then it's not going to happen. And the industry paid billions of dollars out a year ago when everything shut down because there were no exclusions for pandemic illness. I imagine there's some insurance syndicates that are still licking their wounds over that. That cost them billions of dollars. I don't know if anybody's ready to pony up and take that risk again yet either. But they're certainly not going to do it when you can't predict where a tour can go with any reasonable amount of certainty. Because you've been involved in this, Jan, you know what it costs to sideline a whole bunch of trucks and buses, crew, artists, and other people every day. Every day they're not performing costs thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. You can't just say, well, we'll skip the next 2 weeks while we quarantine these people.
Right. I think you're talking more about the crew than the audiences. But still,
well,
if you don't have
a crew, you don't have a show. If you don't have an artist, you don't have a show. And the part about dealing with the audience, I will frankly say, is a matter of capitalistic motivation, because otherwise you're subjecting your audience to a potential health risk. And, you know, I don't expect accountants and lawyers to have any particularly strict moral standard in that regard. And some artists probably don't either, because they have to eat too. And I'm not putting anybody under the bus right away on this, but the reality is that we're still talking about what Steve Adelman from the Event Safety Alliance called moving back into the house while it's still on fire.
Mm-hmm. Well, insurance-wise, you're talking about the insurance against someone catching COVID at an event and suing somebody.
No,
for that?
I'm talking about an artist or an artist crew member that ends up testing positive.
Oh, and they gotta cancel.
Or even symptomatic, and they have to cancel because now all 13 people on that bus, the 12 crew members and the driver, now have to quarantine. So you don't have a show.
You're seeing a little bit of this in the NBA right now, but the NBA has taken a little bit different twist to quarantining the whole crew. It's 6 players test positive, then that team has to sideline for a period of 10 days. But, and I follow the Hornets, and the other night the Hornets played San Antonio, and through their contact testing, a bunch of San Antonio players came down infected. So the Hornets had to sit out for 6 days, even though none of their players showed symptoms. So that meant that the Bulls that were coming into play and some other people had to find a different team to play that night. And they were actually taking on the San Antonio opponents that had to cancel at the same time. So, I mean, it creates a moving target that you don't have any stability to hit the next venue with and know that you're going to go there. And I'm the the NBA is testing everybody every day. And so they're knowing what's going on, but you can't do that on a lot of these other events. It's costing a ton of money, but they're not making any revenue up other than some TV rights.
What do you, where do you think, you know, like if all those teams were all vaccinated and all the crews were all vaccinated, wouldn't it be a totally different scenario?
No, because the vaccine, what I'm reading now, the vaccine only has an 85% effective rate, even at the best end. And it's not affecting the one variant. Now they're saying it may only be 40% effective on. So even though we're relying on the vaccine, I think we're going to end up having to take a different approach to how we're going to do business. The accountants are going to have to get into a different mindset. The audiences are going to have to get into a different mindset. The venues are going to have to get into a different mindset. And we're going to have to all go in and rewrite that cost model on how we're going to have to do the business and how we're going to make money at the show. It's, do we need 13 semi loads of gear to do this show, or will 8 semi loads do? That doesn't do us any good as sound engineers on the other end. Or do we tell the lighting guy to go fly a kite? We're just going to bring 6 or 7 standard lights up and not have fog machines and all that light show. I mean, we've got to figure ways to still do the show effectively with a lower overhead and with a lower profit margin, probably for the next 5 to 6 years.
And fewer people working as well. That's part of it. On the arena show I just did, it was, you know, getting people to work in partners and cohorts and staying separated. Not that it was a cluster by any stretch of the imagination, but it's just that it's a completely different mindset in how you work your local crew. You know, normally it's like, I need 4 hands over here, and, you know, 4 carpenters come sloughing around. It's like, no, you guys are my downstage right carpenters. You're my down left carpenters. You're my upright carpenters, you know, that kind of thing. And you're going to work in those situations. You're not going to work with different people. You're not going to go help the lighting department. You're not going to go run over to sound. You're going to stay in your department, and you're going to work only with certain people, because that way we can contact trace and segregate you better if there's a problem. And yeah, it's going to take a complete rewrite of the profit model. And there are going to be artists who will be unhappy that they are going to be asked to make compromises in their set design, lighting design, video, and audio. We're at a time when immersive audio would be a wonderful, wonderful way to bring people back into arenas, a way of welcoming them back with something they haven't experienced before. I think that would be a tremendous jumping off point, but that costs more money. You're talking about hanging 7 or 11 or more, you know, hangs of PA in order to do that and deliver that to an arena size audience.
Well, it almost sounds to me where we're getting to the point where people who have had COVID already or are vaccinated become a different class of citizen. Whereas, all right, now I want to do a show, and the only people that could come who have already had COVID or have already been vaccinated. And you have to prove that you've had that. Or if I'm a crew member, I could say to you, hey, Tim, put me to work, because you don't have to worry about me catching it because I've already had it. And, so, you know.
So one of the guys I was working with today had COVID in December. And his mindset is, I'm still not safe. And he was just now getting around where he could smell some stuff. So even though you're saying that, Jan, I still think that there's some people out there that are going to be hesitant to jump into that pot. So I think it is, you know, I do a big show every Labor Day weekend, and we pack a few thousand people into a small park. People are shoulder to shoulder. There's just one loop around the outside. You can't move around. People are all in there. I don't think people are going to go back to that. They're going to want to have a couple of feet spacing between them. It may not be 6 feet, but people are not for the next 2 or 3 years going to be willing to go in. You know, there's going to be groups that will want to go into general admission seating, but I think a lot of your stadium concerts won't have GA seating anymore. They'll have assigned seating just so that they can spread people apart.
Well, I also read that Knott's Berry Farm is opening up, and Six Flags Magic Mountain is opening up, and Disneyland is opening up. Okay. So then what do they know that we don't know?
So Carowinds has been opened up, which is on the North and South Carolina border. The park straddles the state. It opened up last July. But It's running at a limited capacity. You have to prepay your tickets and you have an appointment card and you're given a card. So you buy for a 4-hour pass. And then once your 4 hours are up, you have to leave the park. They won't let you on another ride. They won't let you buy any food. You can't do anything but walk around after your 4-hour period. So they're restricting the capacity of the number of people coming in. And I know that what I read with Disney, they're doing the same thing. But on the other side of the coin, I was just reading today that Miami police and Fort Lauderdale police have said absolutely no to spring breakers this year. They're turning the students around. They're closing South Beach down. They're restricting the number of people who are in there. They're cutting alcohol off at 8 p.m., shutting liquor stores down at 8 p.m. So I think the parks that are opening, to go back to your question, Jan, they have rethought their model on how they're going to do it. Carowinds does not have all of their amenities open. They're doing it restricted amenities, and certain rides are only available on certain days so that they don't have to have as many staff members in there.
Mm-hmm. So they're not renting out hazmat suits for people to come into the park to enjoy themselves?
Nope. They're socially distancing. You have to sign up for your rides in advance. You have to, it's all being done as pre-booking before you come in there. You almost got to map your day out before you walk into the park.
But hey, if you want to go to Sturgis in August, that's going to be happening.
Let's have another super spreader event.
Yeah, look what happened last time.
Yeah.
Well, and documenting what happened last time was very difficult because there was a concerted effort to avoid contact tracing and to lie if you were called by a health department. So, you know, there's really, it's hard to specify exactly how many people, you know, were made ill by that event last year. You know, and the estimates are anything from 10 to 20,000 people. Out of the 400 or 260 that showed up, 260,000.
Yeah, I think my point is there's going to be a certain number of organizers that are going to just go ahead and do their events. You know, damn the torpedoes, sort of. You know,
well, and if you have to sue most of them, that if you sue Sturgis in South Dakota, your case will not be heard if you were a victim of some kind in there. They won't even laugh at you. They'll just drag your body to North Dakota.
Has Disney been sued yet over Orlando yet? Any of that disclaimers there?
Not yet.
I haven't heard about that, but I'm really seriously thinking about this, you know, a hazmat rental company. You know, I rent the hazmat suits to the park, you know, go in, be safe, have fun, you know, a bubble suit, you know, get us, you know, put the Mickey Mouse thing on everybody, you know, like on the logo, on the chest, you know, and then everybody has a good time, you know.
Well, you thought insurance was going to be hard for a concert. You try to get insurance for that, Jan.
Dan, you laugh about it. I saw somebody in the airport on Sunday that was in a full suit, rubber booties, gloves, had on a double can respirator and a face shield.
What a sexual pervert. I can't believe it. He wore his costume into the airport. Unbelievable.
Early Halloween.
Yeah. Unbelievable. You know, speaking of which, you know, I heard something along the lines that, like, you know, 47% of all women have used vibrators and the other 53% buy them new. I don't know if you heard that, but
Jan, the best part of you could be replaced with 2 D-cells.
So what's new? Who hasn't spoken yet? Who wants to have something to say? Because let's lighten this party up. You know, let's lighten this party up.
It's, Jan, one of the issues that is coming up, you know, for anybody who's ever made a gear list for any production, you have the gear I need, there's the gear I'd like to have, and then you have the list of spares. And what nobody's really paying attention to is there's now got to be a line item for spare crew. We had a situation a couple of weeks ago where we sent 4 people to a venue for a Red Bull live streaming event. All 4 guys showed up, said hi in the parking lot from 6 feet away. They went in the front door, they did a rapid test. One tested positive and they sent 4 crew away. We had 2 hours to get 4 more people there and to make this event happen. So what if this is a case where, you know, you go into the garden and all of a sudden one guy's in the middle of the floor with 10 other guys And all of a sudden, you know, they find out this guy's positive, all those people are going home. That's the problem. So if you don't have people that are in a budget to bring them in, and you know, the first four had to get paid because they showed up, and the second four got paid because they showed up. So that's a huge issue when you have somebody who is only, for example, a monitor system engineer technician, one front of house guy, and somebody's going to do all rigging, cabling, whatever. Any one of those guys gets sent home at the door, you have a huge problem. If you don't have somebody in the wings that's ready, to, you know, literally down the block waiting, they got to get paid for the day to be available.
Right. Fred has been cashing in on that, haven't you, Fred?
I've done that like 8 times now for ESPN and CBS, and they fly me to the city. I sit in my hotel, I get rapid tested, and I get paid. And I never go to the venue. I never see anybody unless they need me, but I'm there just in case.
But you would. Yeah, you would if somebody tested positive. Yeah. If you tested positive, right?
If the A1 tests positive, I go in and sit in the chair.
So isn't the deal they're working right now is CalRec is working on a new console that you can operate from the studio in LA or wherever in our home, and you only have an A2 that sets up gear or whatever, and the A1 is mixed somewhere.
That's been in place for several years. Pac-12 Network does that, has been doing that for 3 years now.
I know they're doing all the video where they only do collect camera lines and run everything back to LA or Bristol or whatever. And it's all edited and everything done in the bubble in the studios.
Yeah, it's not edited. It's live. They do it live. It's just an A2 and utilities show up and take the feeds. Camera guys show up and set the cameras up. So the only people at the venue are camera guys, usually one A2 and a couple of utilities. There's no technical director, no A1, no graphics, no videotape replays, nothing.
That's a fine mess you've gotten us into, to quote Ollie Hardy. You know, it's another fine mess you've gotten us into. So what are we going to do about it? I mean, really, seriously, you know, what are we going to do about it?
There's a show on the road right now in Texas and Florida. I forget the guy's name. Ken knows, the country Christian artist that has crew out of Nashville, I'm pretty sure. But, you know, I see him being a trailblazer and others following him and just saying, damn the torpedoes and go for it, you know?
So the other thing you got to remember with the Christian artists, Ken, is like in North Carolina, the governor lost a major lawsuit to regulate anything in churches. Churches are left to self-regulate because of the conflict of church and state. And there's a lot of states that the governors have lost that order on. So they're experimenting. Now, we did have one church in the Charlotte area that decided to have a full contact, a full event last spring. And at the end of the day, they infected over 200 people from the East Coast at this event. But the state did get an emergency order to shut them down, but it was very specific and very narrow in terms and definitions. But, you know, that even though the Christian artists are trailblazing it, they actually probably are playing with a little bit of different set of rules than you and I are playing with out in the general public.
Well, they're I know that one tour, is it Toby Mac maybe? Anyway, they're playing arenas.
Yeah,
is that
Toby Mac and Lauren Daigle.
Yeah, so they're
out. She did two like pickup dates with a evangelist and she got roasted for it. And so her tour got canceled.
Oh, okay. It did.
Well, I heard that they had on that Toby Mac tour, they had one day when the opening act tested positive. So they had to like can the opening act or something. And, you know, they have their challenges, but generally speaking, they're doing the shows and they're being as safe as they can be. And they have a COVID compliance officer and they're going for it.
It's almost like I remember when I was growing up in New York, and I think it was Levy's Jewish Rye Bread. I think if it was, and I know this slogan was "Everybody loves Levy's," but I think that I'm not sure if it was Levy's or another kosher product where they said we report to a higher authority, you know. And I think that's how the country acts. Think we report to a higher authority, you know.
A hot dog too.
What do you? Was a hot dog? Is that what it is?
Yeah,
It's Hebrew National.
Yeah, we report to a higher authority. And that's the motto of our country, you know, our Christian Country Act, right, Ken? They report to a higher authority.
Yep.
Exactly. I just saw on my YouTube feed that Joe Bonamassa is doing an Austin City Limits deal on April 1st as a live stream. I think they're going to have an audience there for Austin City Limits, but he's live streaming it as a pay-per-view event.
Hey, Jan.
Yes.
Do you think that guys like Fred and people who are doing arenas and stuff like that in our industry, there has to be a place where we start and we make a standard with what's going on right now. And the only standard we're going to take a cue from are successful venue returns like NFL, NBA, so that we in the entertainment industry need to take a standard from one of these areas in order to be successful. So even though that the Christian industry is really successful right now, they're only playing with small numbers.
Well, the person I would like to bring into this right now is the only one on the panel that looks like he could be a lawyer. And so he might have some answers, and that's Ralph. So Ralph, what do you have to say about that? You know, just looking like a lawyer, we're gonna have to take your advice. So what do you think?
Well, you know, funny enough, my pivot has been in to trying to help people get back to work. And there's a health data management compliance software company I'm working with. We just started working with Madison Square Garden. And I can only say that because we did the opening last night of their, you know, the Knicks coming back, 1,600 people were allowed in. So I've been really immersed in this thing for a while, just trying to get people back in. And between compliance management, just other, you know, sanitization, anything that can help people get back in, we're trying to get off the ground. But with everybody getting hammered financially, nobody has any money to spend to do anything and be proactive. The MSG guys, because James Dolan is a kind of a maverick and he's a unique individual, that he's in real estate. He owns the buildings, he owns the sports teams. He's kind of got to reinvent himself a little bit differently than most. So there's been a few sports teams that have been super proactive, you know, with the players getting tested twice a day. There's a lot of Hollywood that have had hundreds of people on set, but it's costing millions of dollars that nobody ever had a line item for, but they have to do it where they're testing people twice a day. It's an interesting landscape. Some of the other things, if you have had COVID, you can still be a carrier. You can get it again. If you've been vaccinated, you can be a carrier. You can give it to somebody else. Nobody's figured this stuff out yet. The vaccination thing is great. There's on the flip side, there's a big brother component to this thing where there's a fair amount of the population that don't want to be involved in getting vaccinated. What are you telling me if I can't go into Madison Square Garden to see the Knicks because I have to have a vaccination? Fuck you. I'm going to go see the Nets in Brooklyn. You know, nobody's got this thing figured out. It's the wild, wild west, but there's a lot of people trying to figure it out. Angela, I agree with you. I think there needs to be some, not necessarily governing body, but some amount of regulatory guidelines written. I've been talking to, it's so funny, you know, you get into this stuff and you find all these really, really, really smart people that have been doing certain things and haven't been heard for, and now they kind of need to be. But there's, you've heard of LEED certified for green buildings. There's a WELL certification for buildings, health. And I'm working with these guys to try to find out if we can get some sort of guidelines to be able to ordain, you know, movie sets, rock shows, what have you, to be in compliance and say this is a well-certified, you know, this is, you know, I might be talking out of school here, but there's lots of people trying to figure this thing out. Nowhere close to being able to present something, I don't think. But I think these forums like this are fantastic because it's going to grow organically and it needs to come from, you know, the decisions or the checks will be written on C-suite level, but the operations people, the guys that are rolling up their sleeves and have to do this stuff, or what's going to get the ball really rolling and start to let people dig their heels in.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. I think, you know, as I look at it right now, there's someone, it's moving along and there's so much uncertainty. It's almost as if, you know, I don't know why I think along the lines of this, but I always think crazy thoughts, you know, it's like, it was like, it's like we're riding on, you know, we're like a snail riding on a turtle's back and we're going, wee, you know, it's crazy. It's crazy time. And nobody knows the answer, except we're all looking for the answer. And when you put enough minds together, something will come out of it. And as I see the medical science moving forward and more vaccines getting into people's arms, I think things will change. And I think it'll change for the better. And we'll all start going back to work. In the meantime, it seems that one of the things that is happening is there's a lot of filming going on. A lot of actual filming, TV shows, streaming, all that stuff. And every one of those events needs a COVID compliance officer. And that's something that we're all perfect for because of the way we've structured our lives and, you know, putting shows together. I think that's one of the things that's a bright spot in everyone's day-to-day life right now, that COVID compliance thing. Ken was just talking to me about it. And Tom Source, who's on the panel, he's been working nonstop now for a couple of months. And his last day, I think, is this week. And then he's going to come in and talk about it. So next week, Tom should be on the panel talking about his experiences as a COVID compliance officer, unless, of course, he picks up more gigs. Anybody want to say anything about that?
My daughter has been dealing in LA. She's been working down there and Disney has been having them. They got Monday, Wednesday, Friday testing. And interesting is that somewhere in Santa Monica, they have a gynecologist office that's doing all the testing. So the drive-through testing of all these people that have come to set every week.
Yeah. It's happening. Ken, weren't you just offered something as well?
Yeah, I had to turn down. He said, come to our place on Saturday for training and then work through the end of March. And I said, oh, darn, I have a thing planned that I can't get out of for a few of those days. So he said, maybe he'll work it out. We'll see.
Mm-hmm. But so
is anybody following the numbers on this stuff though?
What kind of numbers? You mean how much you can make?
No, I'm sorry. I was meaning more the Corona stuff, you know, like North Dakota, for example, they lifted their mask order January 15th. They're still declining. They are down 94% in new reported cases since November 12th.
Yeah, that's great. So, hey, Mike, you know, you mentioned that you've been mentioning these declines in number of cases for a while now, and that's really cool. But then somebody who I'm guessing is kind of a conspiracy theorist or something said something along the lines of, was it actually the cases that declined or the method of testing for the case or the method of determining whether it's a case, whether it qualifies as a case or not is, you know, become less strict. Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't. I mean, that falls right in that same basket with, you know, the reporting of the numbers early on, you know, being skewed and questionable. I think all the way around, it may be a bit questionable, but no matter how you look, I mean, worldwide, the numbers are falling everywhere. In the U.S., we're now at 81%. So, you know, I know that there's folks out there saying, oh, just because you've had it, you can't get it, blah, 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 blah. But the numbers say different. The numbers say that we are having a bit of an immune reaction and the cases are declining. I really wish that there were more doctors talking about it and saying, hey, you know what? You know, thank goodness, but maybe we were a little bit wrong and we have hit it, or, you know, hang on to your socks. It's going to, I don't know, something.
I suspect that, you know, part of it is that maybe just because there's no longer a mandatory order for masks, people did kind of figure out that, hey, these things work. And, you know, some people will go, hey, I can take this thing off. I'm not required to use it anymore. And other people are going to go, it's been working. And, you know, and maybe they're doing better at staying 6 feet apart, or who knows. I'm not sure we can say a combination of previous and I can't say we can say this is due to one particular thing. I think there's a lot of reasons that things could be improving. And just to keep this in perspective, though, remember, we're down to about the rate we had when we decided that everything was going to hell in a handbasket last July.
So well, except no.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
So the other thing that I've been following this study, and it's been done the last 3 months, and they have taken the numbers from California and taken the numbers from Florida and normalized them. So they've taken the number and taken them to 100,000 per person. The only number that Florida leads California in is deaths of people over the age of 70, but they have 25% higher category of people over 70 in Florida than they do in California. So, and the arguments going back and forth is the mandatory mask, is the mandatory restaurant shutdowns being effective in this, or is this causing, and you know, some of that can be playing into, okay, how do we start to look at this? Is the total shutdown worthwhile, or is it a little bit of overkill and a little bit of hype? So, I mean, I don't know where I sit on that, but it's just interesting that when you start to normalize the numbers and not do the total counts, it seems to be that, you know, they're doing a complete shutdown, sort of like what Martin was saying in England or some other places, is that number really worth the effort?
Well, I think that there are some other things about Florida and California that you could add to it. But I think what's happened is people have fashionized the mask. You know, now you'll see it's become an accessory to women's outfits. And when you look at it, you know, they're wearing masks that match their dresses, match, you know, and more people are wearing masks in California than Florida. And that's why bank robberies are higher in Florida than in California, because bank robbers are having a hard time finding masks. That's what I heard, but I don't know how true that is, you know, so. You know, when I say something like that, I look at you guys' heads and they're going, oh, did he really say that? You know, did he really say
that? Yeah, you were really looking for lighters and you got matches. Yeah,
that's right. Thanks. That's right. I was looking for, I got 13,000 matches while looking for lighters on eBay, you know?
Yeah.
Why I was selling my vacuum cleaner, because all it was collecting dust. So I thought I'd put it up on
probably eBay. Sucked pretty badly.
Kenny, did they say that it was the cycles that changed? What was it that they said they were going to do less of?
That would cause the numbers to look like they're going down?
Yeah, was it cycles? They were changing something.
Yeah, I heard that somewhere, but I sure don't know, Bruce.
And I don't know what a cycle is. You know, you get, what is it, how many times you get checked every month or something? I don't know. You know?
No, it's the, when they put it in their reading device, you know, spectrometer.
Well, it's a technical thing.
If you bombard it, you know, and do super fast cycles, every person on the planet.
Oh, I see.
It finds the very, very minute little particles in everything and everyone.
I was trying to figure out what that meant.
Figure out how to adjust the cycles to where it's effective for human, for finding somebody who actually have it without being so microscopic
that, overly sensitive.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah,
okay. Now I understand. I was trying to figure that out. I'm like, yeah, what? Cool.
Well, they didn't. Yeah. For some reason, they didn't come out with a standard. Here's the level you should test it at. So you had, you know, lab A doing this, lab B doing that, lab C doing this. And the numbers are just all over the freaking place.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I think it was magnification and they'd set a level and then they realized that level was too high and they lowered it.
Wow. Cool.
You know, on a bright side, Foreigner was going to be doing a tour and they bought all this merchandise, right? And so they're sitting with all this merchandise. So they came up with an idea of how to sell this merchandise. So they're selling it online. And what they're saying is that for all of the money that goes from the merchandise, they're going to donate it to their road crews. So, I think that's a great idea as well. You know, so it's something to keep their name out in front of people and also support the road crews.
Hey, now.
No. So I wonder if any other bands are going to be doing that, because there's got to be a lot of merch sitting around out there, you know, that, and I think t-shirts and caps and stuff like that from maybe, you know, Foreigner would sell, but, you know, other bands are doing that too as well, you know.
Good on Mick.
You know, so anyway, I think we've covered everything that we wanted to cover. In regards to the news, if anybody has anything else that they want to say, you know, Ken, I see your hand up. Go ahead.
I need to hear stories from Ralph. I want to hear stories of the history, you know, stuff there from New York. He promised us a purple guy story this week.
Well, that's a good point, because now we're at that point of the mastermind.
Prince, group, purple guy,
where
Prince.
Where we're going to talk about, you know, somebody's going to talk about an experience that they've had, you know, that makes, you know, that they want to share. That's one of the highlights of their career. So if, you know, Kenny has volunteered, Ralph, if you want to talk about it and tell us about one of the highlights of your career, you know, that makes it all worthwhile for you, now would be a perfect time.
There are so many. And there's actually so many I can't really speak about in a public forum. quick one.
That's where you have to write the book, Ralph. You have to write. I'm just going to tell you something. You know, we should all get together and write those chapters, give it to somebody, and then when we're all dead, publish it 50 years after our death. You know, that's how it should be.
So
I don't know, Ralph. This group is, look, we're all pretty old here. Okay. We've survived because we know how to keep our mouth shut. I don't know. You got to worry. I don't know if that point's valid.
Yeah. But we're streaming to thousands of people out there.
Hundreds, tens of people, I'm sure.
I was looking for one where basically you're disappointed that the show was over. You wanted to keep going, or the event was over and you wanted to keep doing what you were doing.
Why, have you heard something that I forgot about? No, I'll tell a really quick story just because I told it last night. So I got a chance to come off the bench and, you know, I was just selling. And every once in a while, I'd go out and mix some shows. And Joe Cocker, this was probably 2009, was doing a dozen shows and everybody was busy. So I got to come off the bench and go mix some Joe Cocker shows, which was the highlight of my career. Most amazing band ever. Doing a show at the Belly Up in Aspen, which is a club for billionaires, basically. So it's a couple hundred people. Everybody in the place is, you know, a billionaire or better. Joe's killing it. And the house guy taps me on the shoulder mid-show and kind of points down. The sound booth is kind of elevated a little bit. And I see this little head popping up, jumping up and down. And this guy going, "You're killing it. You're killing it." It was John Oates. So, John spends time in Nashville, and I ran into him in the Palm one night, and I went up to him and said, "Hey, you know, I'm Ralph. I was mixing Cocker," and he like flips out and does all this, like, you know, just amazing sounding show. Great job. Cut to 5 minutes later, a biker buddy of mine who's bald comes in a wig, you know, Afro wig. So we laugh about it. I go outside to take a phone call. My friend's out there with the Afro wig. I say, "Let me try it on." I put the wig on and second later, out comes John Oates, and he goes, "What are you making fucking fun of me?" That's a highlight. That's the kind of stuff I like.
That's cool. Martin, what about you? Do you have a highlight you want to share with us from England? You know, you've been around a long time in the business. You must have some highlights that you would like to share with us.
I'd have to think about that. It's not something that I can come up with on the spur of the moment. Like Ralph's been thinking about that. Joe Cocker, I can't surpass that.
Nobody can surpass the stories. They're all on their own level. David and I were talking about something the other night. David introduced me to Debbie Reynolds. Debbie Reynolds was looking for a production manager. And so David was her engineer. And so he recommended me for the job. And so we go over to Debbie's house. We're sitting in a living room. And I didn't really know who Debbie Reynolds was, to be blunt with you. You know, I knew she was an old movie star, but work is work. And so we're sitting in the living room and she starts talking about her daughter, saying, "Oh, my daughter has no luck with men, you know, and this and that, you know." And so I said to her, "You know what? I'm single." And she looks at me and she looks at David. She says, "Are you joking? My daughter would eat you up in a second." And then David turns to me and says, "You know who her daughter is? It's Princess Leia." And the boyfriend that she just had a problem with was David.
Not Aykroyd.
The person, Paul Simon, was the boyfriend that she just broke up with.
Paul Simon, right. Fighting over the drugs together.
You know, and I didn't know that. I'm just saying, hey, I'm single.
And I'm shaking my head, Jan, stop. You don't know what you're saying.
That's a good one.
Ken Newman, you must have something you want to talk about with all the acts you've done.
Well, I don't want to bore you, you know, but I was just trying to find the newspaper article. So, you know, the LA Times does, or I don't know if they still do it, but they did reviews of shows. And so I was working for Anita Baker and we did a bunch of shows around the country. I forget where, but, you know, and then we ended up in LA for a few nights at the Universal Amphitheater right between Christmas and New Year's. And Jamie Anderson was my sim guy because Dave Lawler had to go work for Barry Manilow because of previous commitment with him. And anyway, point is that I'm working for Anita Baker. Jamie Anderson is EQing the system for me. And it's a really good sounding show. Jamie has it perfect sounding and everything, and it sounds the same everywhere. And then the next morning, I look in the paper and there's a review of the show and it is horrendous. It is an absolutely scathing review of how Anita Baker, the sound could not have been worse for Anita Baker. And I was like, oh great, I'm definitely not gonna have this gig anymore, right? So I actually called the reviewer and I said, "What show were you at? You know, what, the sound was bad? What are you talking about?" He said, "Well, I couldn't hear the voice as much as I would like to." I was like, "Well, gosh, you sure didn't say that. I'm probably going to get fired because I'm the guy that was controlling the sound." And, you know, he was nice enough and everything. But then I go to the gig that night and, you know, you've all heard stories about Anita Baker and how vicious she can be and how she fires people a lot and monitor guys in particular. And she goes through sound guys like crazy. But she had been always pretty nice and everything, but you know, a little bit on the loony side, and she would be the first to say that she's the crazy lady. But anyway, I get there to the gig that night and I go down to the stage. I'm thinking, you know, let me be proactive about this. I'm not gonna, you know, beat around the bush. I'm just gonna say, hey, sorry about that review, you know. So I go down and she's on stage just kind of checking the place out, and I said, I'm really sorry about that review. And she's like, "What review?" I said, "You know, LA Times, you know, it was pretty bad." And she said, "Oh, reviews, what reviews, you know, these," and she points to the front rows, "these people are my reviewers. These people in the front rows, they're the ones, they were having a great time. So I know it sounded great. So don't you worry about a thing. It was great. Don't worry about it." I was like, oh my God, are you kidding? You know, that was such a relief because she could have easily just fired any artist that got that bad of a sound review would have, you know, normally fired their sound person. I'm pretty sure it was really bad. I was looking for it in the archives of LA Times. I'll have to find it and post it or something. But anyway, it was a really bad sound review, and I was totally relieved, and it totally went against her reputation.
That's a great story. That's a very, very good story. All right, who else wants to share? Who else wants to share? Somebody else. Fred, I bet you've done a million shows. You must have something you want to share. Bruce, come on. Which one of you two guys want to go next? Don't make me tell another story.
I think David has a Dom DeLuise story he wants to share.
David?
Well, everybody has a Dom DeLuise story they want to share.
Right?
Anybody who's ever worked with Dom DeLuise
has first of all, do you guys know who Dom DeLuise is? If you don't know, anyway, great, great comedian from, when was that? In the 80s or 70s, yeah, I guess.
Burt Reynolds' buddy in a Cannonball Run, his movies. But when you're working the casino acts like Kenny and I did, the opening act is usually a comedian. So I've worked with all the greatest comedians, even though I didn't do anything. You know, I'd sit around and listen to them. But Dom DeLuise, I actually got to mix because I was the house sound guy at the Sahara Tahoe. And his act was, he comes out with a Karnak the Great turban, and he's a magician. He's Dominic the Great, the greatest magician in the whole world, except with his Italian accent, because it's Dom DeLuise, and this is the bit, it's a Dominica the Great, the greatest magician in the whole world. And he would do the same bit every night, and every sound guy will do his bit for you. Kenny, do a little Dom DeLuise.
No applause, please, a save for the end.
And the coin, and he would take a coin, and none of his tricks worked, by the way, this is part of the bit. You know, they would all fail miserably. And then he would just move on like nothing happened. But he would do one where you take a coin and you drop it into a bucket. And then you move your hand over and...
That's you, David. Unmute.
Sorry, I can't move my hand off the space bar. Let me do it for real. So he would... the guy out in the front of the house, his manager, would have a coin in a bucket, and so Dom would drop the coin in the bucket, which he really wouldn't do, and you hear a clink, and then he'd go over somewhere else and the coin would be there. So the coin would, what do you say, the coin would move from here
yeah.
to there.
No to applause. The thin air, to the thin air.
To the thin air, no applause please, save it for the end. And so any sound guy who's ever done Dom DeLuise has all of these lines, and it's just funny.
But the best part, was that I worked at resorts for how many months? Probably 6 months, 9 months I was working at resorts. I never went backstage and hung out in the dressing room. But after the Dom DeLuise shows, we all, like our old crew, went back in the dressing room and hung out with Dom DeLuise. It was hilarious.
So I have another Dom DeLuise story. Burt Reynolds was on Evening Shade, which won him an Emmy. And he decided to go out to do a one-man show because Burt Reynolds was famous for being the raconteur of Hollywood. Apparently, David Niven was the guy who told all the great stories. And he said to Burt, "Burt, I'm passing the mantle on to you because you tell the best stories." But Burt Reynolds hosted The Tonight Show dozens of times because of how well he could tell a story. So he decides to go out and do a one-man show of storytelling. And I got hired to design the show, be the executive producer, and then go out a co-executive producer with Burt and go out and do the show. And we ended up with, this was in the 90s, I think. And I got introduced to the guy from Faroujia Labs, who's the one who put high definition into Sony camcorders. So Eve Faroujia gave me a line doubling device to turn our video projection into high definition. It was the first high definition video to go out on the road anywhere, because this was a $250,000 machine that he just decided to donate to the show. And Dom DeLuise did the intro because he and Burt were such great friends. He would come out and introduce Burt to the show. And then Burt would come out, and we had Laserdisc players with stills and films. And we had a list of what he wanted to do for that show. And I had somebody backstage on a Mac that I had a program written for. When Burt would start the story, we would go to that number. And so that still in that video would show up. So it was a really great production. And he would speak for 3 hours with an intermission. And at the end, the audience was standing wanting more. I mean, he was just such a great storyteller. And so I got to hang out with Dom DeLuise for a few weeks until we finally put his intro on tape. But he is a really funny, wonderful, wonderful guy.
That was a great tour. That was an absolutely great tour. It was some of the best theaters. It was some of the best and oldest theaters. I remember going to the Detroit Theater. It was really beautiful.
Yeah, he wanted to play only the best old grand theaters. We didn't play any modern place at all in the entire tour. It was all those Chicago
theaters. Like the Foxes and stuff like that. Yeah.
And the Sanger in New Orleans and just great old theaters. So it was a wonderful tour to be on. And then I got a production credit because I put it together. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's my story for the week.
I've got a great story. I've got a great story myself, but for those people on Facebook and YouTube, you're going to have to wait till next week to hear it, but I will, not that I'm not dropping any names, Bon Jovi, but I've got a great Bon Jovi story, and I will share that with you guys next week, same time, same place at 3:30 on the Left Coast time. Just remember, everything you heard today is an opinion. So remember, if you want to check it out, you can, do your own research. And remember, you could always participate in this show just by clicking on the link and DMing me. We'll send you a link to get into the room. The other thing that I would like to say is, if you like the show or you didn't like the show, give it a thumbs up, give it a like, share it with your friends, do all that stuff. We'll be here. We'll keep talking. Remember, you make it happen. So stay safe and healthy till next week, or then, points on.
What, it's 3 o'clock, right, Ken? You said 3:30, but I was thinking you were talking about 3:30? Some other. I think you might have said 3:30. So it's
maybe
3 o'clock, though,
right? Maybe
I was thinking
about going to the dentist, because whenever I go to the dentist, I like to go at 2:30.
2:30, yeah.
2:30, but that's when I go to the dentist. And by the way, the jokes of the week were spread into the show, so you it's not always going to be.
You gotta look for them. They're kind of like Easter eggs. Yeah, they're just everywhere. Yeah,
you look for the Easter eggs, and remember, you make it happen. So thanks a lot for watching. We're going to say goodbye to you on streaming service. We're going to stay here in the room and talk about whatever else we want to talk about. Probably going to talk about you.
We'll talk about you. Yeah, that's what we'll talk about. Yeah.
All right, we are off the air. All right,
very good. I see recording is still recording.